presented by the American Bankers Association.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Playbook co-author Ryan Lizza. It's Friday, March 22nd. Here's what's driving the day. We're on shutdown watch this morning. Funding for 70% of the government runs out tonight at midnight. The House is scheduled to vote on the so-called minibus this morning, and then we'll see how fast the Senate is able to clear the bill. On Thursday, the most likely suspects to hold it up were loudly complaining, but notably fell short of threatening a shutdown. Next up, America's relationship with Israel continues to roil Democratic politics. The latest flashpoints are a possible address to Congress by Bibi Netanyahu that has Democrats divided on whether they would attend. Elsewhere in Congress, placing restrictions on aid to Israel has a growing constituency among Democrats. And out on the campaign trail, this fight is playing out in primary battles. One increasingly prominent group to watch on that front is the Democratic Majority for Israel, which is targeting House Democrats who the group sees as hostile to Israel. This week on the Deep Dive podcast, we sat down with the president of the Democratic Majority for Israel, Mark Melman, a longtime Democratic pollster. We got into the weeds on the new politics of this issue inside the Democratic Party. And we also talked about every other big polling question that's front and center in 2024. Biden's age, Trump's hold on the GOP, double doubters, abortion, the fate of Nikki Haley voters, and whether you should bother paying attention to polls at all. That show is out now and available wherever you get your podcasts. And our big story of the day is a vibe check on the Biden campaign, as it seems to have successfully, at least for now, quieted panicked Democrats ever since the president's State of the Union speech. Joining me to talk about that is national politics reporter Elena Schneider, who has a new piece out that takes us inside the Biden campaign. Good morning, Elena.
Hey, Ryan.
So let's start with what you set out to do in this piece. What was the assignment here?
So our goal was to get a sense of where things are right now, and to try and give readers a real sense of what it feels like inside the Biden campaign in this sort of pivotal moment, right, where we've seen the two likely nominees turn into presumptive nominees, where both President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump clinched their sort of delegate thresholds. And then we also saw this major address, the State of the Union, which is arguably one of the, you know, strongest scene speeches that the president is going to get, or the biggest audiences he'll get until the convention. And so we wanted to give a sense for readers what it feels like inside of the campaign right now in this moment in which they're turning towards a general election. And we found a campaign that was feeling a little bit better about where they stood, not necessarily in how they felt about the campaign, but rather how other people were seeing their campaign, how these two big moments, the State of the Union address, Biden's performance in it, and then also this rush of action that we have seen from the campaign itself, hiring staff, a $30 million ad buy, a rush of campaign office openings, the president and the vice president racing through a number of swing states in the last 2 weeks. Two things coupled together have really alleviated some concerns from a Democratic Party that is pretty known for being open about their concerns.
So let's talk about the State of the Union and what the goal was there and what the after effects have been. Last year, it didn't produce much of a bump. I think historically, I was reading that, you know, the average State of the Union bump is actually zero for the last couple of decades. So maybe not shocking that it didn't get much. But what did the Biden campaign see as the goal of that speech?
You're right. It's traditionally we don't see some major jump or bump in terms of job approval rating when it comes to a post-State of the Union address. But I think what their goal here was not so much to try and get some huge jump in the polls, but rather to alleviate concerns of particularly Democrats. And that goes for both sort of the grass tops or the Democratic elites, the people who you see talking on CNN, writing in the op-ed pages of the New York Times, but also voters. You know, the people who turn into States of the Union tend to be the kinds of voters who are more engaged in the political process And therefore, think of more base voters, traditional Democratic, Democratic voters who in public polling have said time and again that they're, in fact, not all that excited about Joe Biden running for re-election, that they are also concerned about his mental fitness as an 81-year-old seeking re-election. So I think the goal was to try and make clear to both of those audiences that, in fact, the president was not only ready, but was really fired up and was going to be able to run a really robust and strong campaign for the next 8 months or so against Donald Trump.
I don't know if they're hanging up mission accomplished banners over the headquarters in Delaware. A little premature for that. But I definitely notice, you know, just from the insider conversation is a sense of relief that speech did have the intended effect on the famous bedwetters of the Democratic Party.
Well, I think you're totally right in saying that this was more about vibes than it was about a concrete evidence as of yet. This was really taking a look at how people are just feeling, which is sort of can be a difficult task at times. But again, it was about capturing the vibes because it's not translating. To your point, it's totally not translating yet into the polls. We've seen a marginal uptick in his polling averages around his job approval ratings, going from about 38% job approval to 40%. That's still not a really good position to be in as an incumbent. And we've still seen a slew of battleground polls in the last 2 weeks since the State of the Union that have come out saying that he's still trailing Donald Trump anywhere from 1 to 5 points. So this is definitely not yet seeping into the broader electorate. And it also shows how steep of a hill he still has to climb. But I think what we were trying to capture is, again, just sort of how people in and around the Democratic ecosystem feel. And for a long time, that feeling was not so great. And it's, you know, feeling slightly better. They're pausing before they're pulling any panic buttons right now.
Your piece is not about fundraising, but one thing where I imagine they are feeling pretty good is the matchup in terms of dollars raised with Donald Trump. What are the Biden campaign folks saying about that?
You're right. That's absolutely a big component of why people are feeling better right now. The money picture for Joe Biden looks a lot better than the one for Donald Trump. He has about double the cash on hand than the Trump campaign and the RNC combined. And look, Donald Trump is facing a whole host of legal challenges in which he's having to spend a significant portion of his campaign money focused on paying those legal bills. And I think that Joe Biden spent, about $200,000 tops on legal services last month. So it just shows that there's this enormous disparity, not only in these legal bills, but also just as the incumbent who was able to sock away money for many, many months and is now able to unload it. And I think that, you know, I've written about this before, is that part of the strategy or part of the big picture strategy here from the Biden campaign is just to bury Donald Trump in cash, to bury him in campaign ad spending, which we've seen start already in these swing states where, you know, they've got about $30 million worth of ads over the next month. And that's earlier than we've ever seen this happen before. They wanted to find this race as fast and as soon as possible and cement that in the minds of voters before Donald Trump can dig himself out of this money hole that he's found himself in.
Got it. Well, thank you very much, Elena. Great piece. And shout out to your co-author, Jonathan Lemire.
The best collaborator. Yep.
I'm sure you did all the work. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ryan.
And for your schedule today, the Senate and the House are in. After a week of travel, President Biden is heading home to Delaware for the weekend. The music in today's show was composed by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Callan Tansel-Suddeth is our podcast producer. Annie Reese is managing producer. Mike DeBonis and Zach Stanton are our saintly editors. I'm Ryan Lizza. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.
I'm Rob Nichols, President and CEO of the American Bankers Association. America's banks believe that everyone should be able to enjoy the safety, convenience, and other benefits that come with a bank account. That's why banks of all sizes in the Washington area and across the country now offer low-cost and easy-to-use bank-on certified accounts. To learn more about our goal to get everyone banked and to see if a bank-on account might be right for you, visit aba.com/getbanked.